Long before the Galactic Republic rose in 25053 BBY, the galaxy thrived in a pre-Republic era, also known as the Early Hyperspace Age. It was an age of cosmic beginnings where ancient species like the Colomai, Kilix, Rakata, and the enigmatic Celestials, whose stories have vanished into legend, pioneered interstellar travel and shaped the fates of countless worlds. These advanced civilizations not only explored the stars, but also influenced the development of emerging species, leaving their mark through monumental constructs. It was a time when the galaxy's mysteries were being etched into the galaxy's future.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
The Tosche station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
What the qua?
An ancient species from the outer rim planet of Dathomir constructed infinity gates and star temples during the pre-Republic era. The infinity gates, located within star temples, enabled instantaneous interstellar travel. The Kwa were towering cobalt-blue Saurians who may have had an extragalactic origin, renowned for their telepathic abilities and incredible physical speed. Their advanced technology allowed them to build a vast empire long before the Republic, shaping galactic history alongside other ancient species like the Celestials and Gree. However, the Kwa's benevolence turned tragic when they uplifted the Rakata, granting them knowledge of the Force and advanced technology. The Rakata's dark ambitions led to war as they sought the Infinity Gates for conquest. To thwart the Rakata, the Kwa destroyed or sealed the gates and retreated to Dathomir, leaving guardians like the formidable Wufa Worms. Over millennia, their influence faded, and the once mighty Kwa devolved into the primitive Kwi, surviving only as a shadow of their former glory amid the ruins of their ancient legacy.
Infinity Gates and Star Temples.
The Infinity Gates were both a gateway to the stars and a weapon of unimaginable power. Using the power of the cosmos, or the Force, these gates allowed instantaneous travel across the galaxy through pocket dimensions accessed through star chambers. Housed in imposing pyramidal star temples, the Infinity Gates also harbored the terrifying ability to unleash infinity waves, cosmic forces capable of annihilating planets and rendering entire sectors impassable in hyperspace. These star temples were safeguarded by elaborate traps and the Realm of Infinity, a control station where the power of the gates could be directed. However, such power was dangerous in the wrong hands. In 31 BBY, the Night Sister Zalem sought to harness an infinity gate on Dathomir to unleash destruction upon Coruscant, aiming to obliterate the Jedi Order and the Republic's heart by using it to fire an infinity wave. Her plan was foiled by Jedi Knight Quinlan Vos, who, as a Temple Guardian, reversed the wave, causing the gate to implode, forever sealing its perilous power. The destruction of the Infinity Gate marked the end of a tool that once defined the Kwa's greatness, leaving only whispers of their legacy and the ruins of their once mighty temples scattered across the galaxy. In 12 ABY, the Imperial Remnant turned its gaze toward the Star Temple on Dathomir, dispatching Sijit Ranth to uncover its secrets. However, his investigation proved fruitless. The Star Chamber, the heart of the temple's legendary Infinity Gate, had long since vanished. Defeated by the absence of intangible relics, the project was abandoned. Shifting their focus, the Remnant redirected their efforts toward a more immediate source of power, recruiting the Nightsisters as part of the Project Nightsaber instead.
Ancient Guardians. As the Quad devolved into the barely sentient Kree, they left behind animal guardians to their technology. The giant Wufa worm, bred by the ancient Quad, served as formidable guardians of the Infinity Gates. Intelligent creatures with hydrostatic skeletons, they burrowed deep beneath the earth, consuming minerals and safeguarding the star temples from intruders. Unlike many worm species, Wufa worms were not asexual. Females emitted a semi-viscous trail to attract mates, adding to their mystique. On Dathomir, the thinner Wufa worms became integral to the culture of the planet's Nightsister clans. Ritualistic hunts were held to capture these creatures, their durable hides used for armor and rope, while their meat provided sustenance. When Han Solo visited Dathomir, he participated in a Wufa retrieval ceremony with the Singing Mountain clan, experiencing firsthand the traditions of the ancient practice. The danger of these creatures extended beyond Dathomir. During an escape from Plunder Moon, Jedi Padawan Nuru Kungurama and his allies encountered a Wufa worm while fleeing through an Infinity Gate. Despite the peril, they managed to escape, a testament to the creature's relentless nature, enduring legacy of the Kwa who created them. Kalamai Curiosities.
The Kulamai, among the galaxy's most ancient sentient species, were a testament to the extremes of evolution. Recognized instantly by their towering intellects and fragile bodies, they embodied the triumph and cost of prioritizing the mind over the physical form. Their large, hairless heads, with immense black eyes and veined temples, comprise a third of their 1.75-meter height. These eyes, evolved far beyond simple photoreceptors, allowed them to see sound and radio waves, but at the expense of other senses such as smell and touch. Their vestigial arms and legs, unable to support their weight even in the low gravity of their homeworld, were reduced to repositories for essential organs, leaving the Kalamai reliant on advanced technology for mobility and survival. The Kalamai's journey began in the marshes of Kalamus, where their reptilian ancestors developed buoyant bodies and webbed feet to navigate the swamps. Over millennia, they transitioned to arboreal life, laying eggs in trees and evolving prehensile tails and hands. Tool use marked their rise to sentience, and soon they abandoned their primitive existence for towering cities perched above the marshes supported by great pylons. By 2 million BBY, the Kalamai had achieved interstellar travel, among the first species to explore the galaxy's far reaches. Yet their exploration was met with disappointment. Primitive civilizations and harsh planetary gravities led them to retreat to Kalamus, abandoning space travel. Some speculate this withdrawal mirrored the caution of the enigmatic Sharu, avoiding potential conflicts with the Celestials. On their homeworld, the Kalamai focused inward, their brains expanding to unprecedented complexity, while their bodies atrophied. Machines became their lifeblood, with hoverpods and droids carrying out every physical task, controlled effortlessly by the Kalamai's brainwaves. The Kalamai mental hoverpod was a marvel of technological elegance, blending utility with cerebral prowess of its creators. Resembling sleek, floating metal chairs, these hoverpods responded effortlessly to the mental commands of their users, a testament to the Kalamai's mastery of mind-machine integration. At 3 meters in length and powered by a compact fusion generator, the hoverpod was a personal vehicle designed for both comfort and functionality. While it could accommodate only one user, it was capable of carrying an additional 50 kilograms of cargo, perfect for light travel or small expeditions. Gliding up to 3 meters above the ground and reaching speeds of 120 kilometers per hour, the hover pod was as efficient as it was sophisticated. Initially exclusive to the Colomai, their advanced engineering eventually adapted the hover pod for use by other species, including humans, Huts, Duros, Celestans, and Bith. However, not all found the pods as seamless to operate as their creators. Many users experienced disorienting side effects such as nausea, a quirk that required the use of stabilizing serum to counteract. The Colomai government operated as a slow-moving democracy, with endless deliberations ensuring equal input from every member. However, during the Galactic Empire's rise, they displayed surprising pragmatism, swiftly aligning with imperial interests to secure their isolation. Despite their disdain for primitive species, some Colomai served the Empire, while others, like the rogue thinker Boss Tosk, lent their brilliance to criminal organizations or the Rebel Alliance. Colomai civilization, while technologically advanced, waned in galactic influence by the later Republic era. Their low-gravity homeworld, marketed as a tourist destination, failed to attract significant trade. Still, their cloning facilities, essential for reproduction, remained active, though restricted during the Clone Wars. The Colomai occasionally ventured into the galactic stage, contributing to innovations like the GH-7 medical droid, another testament to their logical and efficient engineering prowess. Though their empire faded and their isolation grew, the Colomai remained a species defined by their intellect, viewing the galaxy with a mix of curiosity and quiet superiority. Their legacy lingered, a reminder of the heights and sacrifices of pure mental evolution.
We the Gree.
The Gree were an ancient species of gray, tentacled cephalopods hailing from the outer rim planet of Gree. These beings, standing between 0.8 and 1.2 meters tall, were unmistakable in appearance. Their oversized heads, adorned with immense brain sacs that drooped behind them, and sad, dark eyes gave them an air of timeless wisdom and mystery. Their six tentacles were specialized for different tasks: fine manipulation, heavy gripping, and ambulation, creating an image of a shambling, gray mass of flesh when they moved. The Gree had no visible mouths, communicating instead through fleshy folds beneath their eyes, which often required spongy devices in Type 1 atmospheres to assist in vocalization and respiration. The Gree were among the galaxy's oldest civilizations, their origins lost even to their own scholars. Thought to have evolved on their homeworld of Gree hundreds of thousands of years before the rise of the Galactic Republic, they reached an astonishing level of technological sophistication. Their mastery of hyperspace, navigation, and advanced machinery allowed them to explore the stars in an era when most other species had yet to industrialize. The Gree's civilization flourished during the epoch known to their historians as the Most Ancient and Forgotten Days, a golden age when their influence extended across the Outer Rim. Their creations, marvels of engineering and artistry, stood as silent testaments to their greatness, unmatched by those who followed. While the Gree ruled and traded with less advanced worlds, they adhered to a strict policy of technological stewardship, refusing to gift technology to civilizations that were not theoretically capable of developing it themselves. Their exploration fleet included legendary vessels like the Gray Secant, an automated ship tasked with cataloging the galaxy's mysteries. The Gree's policy of non-interference highlighted their belief in the sanctity of intellectual and technological progression. The Gree's reign coincided with other ancient powers, including the Claw, Kilix, and the Celestials, the Gree, along with the Kwan Kilix, served the Celestials, aiding in the construction of monumental technological wonders. However, the rise of the Rakata's infinite empire brought devastation. As the Rakata rebelled against Celestials and expanded their empire, the Gree found themselves locked in a bitter struggle, not only with the Infinite Empire, but also with their longtime rivals, the Kwa. This era of conflict, spanning millennia, weakened their once mighty civilization. Amid these turbulent times, the Gree became embroiled in a war with a large Saurian species, a conflict so destructive that it indirectly led to the escape of the Chaos Bringer Abeloth. Kilik histories depicted the Gree sacrificing members of their Saurian foes to placate Abeloth, further deepening the air of dread and mystery surrounding their culture. Though the Gree's golden age faded long ago, their legacy persisted in the form of their ancient technology, which inspired awe and wonder across the galaxy. The Gree were not just builders of marvels. They were the silent witnesses of galactic history, their lives intertwined with the rise and fall of civilizations. Long before the rise of the Old Republic, the Gree withdrew from galactic affairs, sealing the borders of their Gree enclave and entering a period of cultural retreat known as the Orange Conic Era. By the time the Jedi Order emerged on Tython, the Gree had vanished into myth, their history relegated to whispers and legends. Yet the echoes of their influence endured, drawing the fascination of Tython researchers, who speculated that ancient structures, like the Old City, bore the hallmarks of Gree ingenuity. They were renowned for their bizarre yet breathtaking technology, a legacy from their golden age, an era that had ended millennia before the Republic's dawn. Their engineering prowess shaped everything from Coruscant's infrastructure to cloaking devices for the Sith Emperor's space station. However, as the centuries passed, much of their technological mastery faded, and the Gree themselves became isolated custodians of decaying marvels. In rare moments of contact, their creations continued to intrigue. After the Great Sith War, assassin droids enhanced with Rakatan technology found a home in Gree space, employed as shadowy agents for Sentry. By 3643 BBY, Coruscant still relied on Gree-designed systems for power and waste processing, maintained by visiting Gree droids. Even the Sith Empire leveraged ancient Gree devices, such as a hyperspace computer that allowed safe navigation to the fabled Maelstrom Prison. The Gree fleet remained elusive, but whispers of their return stirred the galaxy during the Old Republic era. The Gray Secant, an automated exploration ship from their distant past, resurfaced on Ilum, drawing the attention of both the Republic and Sith amidst their escalating conflict. Meanwhile, a Gree hypergate on Asation became a flashpoint as agents of the Dreadmasters sought to exploit it for their sinister purposes. Forced into action, the Gree dispatched emissaries to the Republic and Sith Empire, seeking aid to counter this looming threat. A legacy in decline.
Despite their ancient prestige, the Gree of the Republic's twilight years were a shadow of their former selves. They remained obscure, known primarily to xenoarchaeologists and specialists in alien cultures. Even their once celebrated creations, like Count Dooku's Solar Sailor and the Trident-class assault ships, were only adaptations of long-lost designs. The Gree's disdain for standard galactic technology, particularly droids, only deepened their isolation. By the time of the Galactic Empire, The Gree were reduced to caretakers of their decaying wonders. Imperial scouts made limited contact with Captain Marix, earning the rare privilege of visiting their homeworld. The Empire maintained a modest consulate within the Enclave, overseen by Consul General Scalus, but relations remained minimal, reflecting the Gree's retreat from relevance. The Gree's story is one of dazzling heights and slow decline. From builders of legendary technologies and allies of ancient powers, to the stewards of forgotten relics, their legacy remains a tantalizing glimpse into the galaxy's primordial past. Though their influence waned, their creations and storied history ensured that the Gree would always occupy a place in the annals of galactic lore.
Social order.
The Gree once thrived in a society that was meticulously divided into distinct castes, each with its own purpose and duties. These castes were marked not only by their responsibilities, but by physical hieroglyphic tattoos on their foreheads, symbols that denoted rank and caste affiliation. But as the Gree reached the zenith of their technological achievements, their society began to crumble under its own weight, and the once balanced castes slowly collapsed into a rigid hierarchy dominated by a single group. The Gree society once boasted four primary castes: the crafters, the researchers, the operators, and the administrators. Each played a vital role in the Gree enclave, balancing one another in harmony.
Crafters. The heart of Gree innovation, these individuals were responsible for the creation and production of devices that powered their society. They were the architects of the Gree's technological marvels, but as time wore on, they faded into obscurity, eventually vanishing entirely.
Researchers. Tasked with pushing the boundaries of technology and knowledge, the researchers sought to innovate and explore new realms of science. However, like the crafters, they were eventually rendered redundant and disappeared from Gree society, their contributions forgotten.
Operators. Initially just one caste among equals, the operators were the ones who played the machines, operating the vast network of technology that defined Gree civilization. As technology advanced to unimaginable levels, these operators grew in power, eventually dominating the other castes. They became the de facto leaders of the Gree, holding a position of unrivaled authority.
Administrators. The administrators were tasked with overseeing governance, ensuring that the Gree society remained stable and orderly. While they once held influence, their role waned as the operator caste rose to prominence.
The lack of a warrior caste in Gree society meant that droids were used to fulfill any martial needs, further distancing the Gree from the brutal realities of combat. Over time, the power dynamics shifted. The operators, with their unmatched understanding of the machines, became the sole rulers, while the other castes crumbled away, forgotten by the very civilization they helped to build. As the Gree entered their latter years, their once thriving society became increasingly apathetic. With no need for crafters or researchers, and unable to recall the bioengineering processes necessary to reproduce members of those castes, the Gree became a shadow of their former selves. The Grandmasters and Guildmasters, once revered for their immense knowledge, hoarded their secrets, guarding them jealously and allowing them to be lost to time. Their society grew stagnant, with most Gree now relegated to performing basic tasks, merely existing to serve the operators. The lower ranks of Gree society became near mindless, performing simple duties to earn their sustenance or wealth. These masses, referred to as the common rabble, lacked any real skills and were generally viewed with disdain by the operators, even though they served a functional role in the economy. Among them were traders, considered slightly above the common masses for their ability to negotiate with outsiders. Yet despite their role, traders were still looked down upon by the elite, even though they were valued for their ability to bring in new goods and clients from beyond the Enclave. The Gree elite consisted of grandmasters, individuals who were masters of their craft and recognized as leaders in their respective fields. Beneath them were guildmasters, who ran the various guilds of the Enclave. These guilds operated with an almost strict caste system of their own, with each guild holding a limited number of seats for masters, thus restricting the rise of new leaders. The guilds oversaw specialized subgroups, such as constructors, synthesizers, and text masters. Masters, though highly respected, jealously guarded their knowledge, and many secrets were lost as they passed on little to their apprentices. Beneath the masters were senior assistants, those on the brink of mastery, but still waiting for their chance to claim a seat of power. Students, the lowest of the caste members, served the masters and assistants, learning the craft by performing menial tasks in hopes of one day rising through the ranks.
Language.
The Gree's communication was as complex as their society. Their language, filled with metaphors based on geometry and color, proved almost impossible for other species to fully comprehend. These intricate symbols served as another barrier between the Gree and the galaxy, reinforcing their isolationist tendencies. As the Gree entered the Imperial era, their culture had deteriorated. Once known for their boundless creativity and technological prowess, they had become custodians of decaying heritage, with only a few remaining masters able to maintain their once glorious devices. The golden age of the Gree was long gone, and their descendants, now few in number, found themselves clinging to the remnants of a lost civilization, unable to revive the brilliance of their ancestors. Technology.
Long before the Imperial era, the Gree had reached technological peak that surpassed even the might of the Galactic Empire. Their innovations, born a millennia ago, were so advanced and alien that they seemed almost magical to the civilizations that came after them. By the time the Empire rose to power, the Gree had already mastered the art of stellar engineering, quanta technology, and dimensional manipulation, fields of science that the galaxy could scarcely comprehend. At the height of their civilization, the Gree's technology was not just functional, but also artistic. Their devices, when operated, produced melodies as though the machinery itself needed to be, quote, played like an instrument to work correctly. These intricate gadgets, including self-contained artificial intelligences, some so powerful they could seize control of entire starships. The oldest surviving Gree technologies were far ahead of anything the Empire could offer, their designs both beautiful and profoundly advanced. Their navigational computers were a marvel in themselves, operating on principles that baffled even the most advanced Imperial scientists. These devices allowed the Gree to chart courses through treacherous regions of space, including asteroid fields and deadly nebula, with ease. Designed for the Gree's six-limbed physiology, the interface of these computers was so unique as the species themselves. The Gree also developed self-aware droids, using them not only for everyday tasks, but also to defend their empire in battle. But by the time of the Galactic Civil War, the Gree had grown disillusioned with droids, considering them beneath their exalted ideal of personal expertise. The Gree's technological prowess extended beyond their starships. They had the ability to terraform entire planets to suit their needs, creating ecosystems that could support life in environments previously thought inhospitable. They even engineered primitive organisms to sustain their artificial ecosystems, a feat that few could understand, let alone replicate. Additionally, the Gree's Hypergate technology revolutionized travel, allowing instantaneous travel between distant points in space, similar to, but not the same as, the Qua Infinity Gates. Among the wonders of Gree engineering were their sail ships, rare vessels that use their own mysterious sails, some of which even ended up adorning Geonosian solar sailors. The Gree also constructed enormous starships more akin to moving cities than traditional ships, such as the imposing Rokak Baran. These massive vessels reflected the Gree's advanced understanding of both engineering and scale, their ships capable of housing entire civilizations as they traveled across the galaxy.
Who were the Sharu?
The Sharu were a mysterious and ancient race of humanoids whose legacy lingered in the towering plastic pyramids that stood as silent sentinels on the world of the Rafa system. These colossal structures, enigmatic in their design, whispered of a time long past. A time when the Sharu's mystery over the fabric of reality itself seemed boundless. Yet it was the mind harp of Sharu that truly captured the imagination, a strange, ever-changing artifact that defied comprehension. The singular object shifted ceaselessly through dimensions, its form never the same for long, as though it existed beyond the grasp of time and space, a living paradox in the heart of the cosmos. Beneath the towering shadow of their largest pyramid, Lando Calrissian and Vufi-Ra stood in awe, gazing at the ancient wall pictorials that lined the cavernous expanse. These faded images, half obscured by time, whispered stories of the Sharu's forgotten past, hinting at the mysterious race that had come before them. A starfish-shaped species whose legacy was etched in every jagged line and curve. Around 100,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, the Sharu, once a dominant and highly advanced civilization, found themselves facing an existential threat. The Celestials, a powerful alien force, cast a long, looming shadow over the species. Fearing annihilation, they retreated from the stars, concealing their once great cities beneath massive plastic pyramids that hid them away from the prying eyes of the galaxy. But this was not just a physical retreat, it was a spiritual one. To safeguard themselves further, the Sharu created the Mind Harp, an ancient artifact designed to signal when the galaxy had become safe once more. Only when another civilization could awaken it would the Sharu know the time had come to emerge from the depths. In their long isolation, they had devised a chilling method of self-preservation, crystalline life orchards that drained their intellect, reducing them to the primitive state of the Toka, or broken people. In this form, they lived in oblivion, their brilliant minds shrouded in obscurity. Before this cataclysmic event, however, the Sharu had been a force to reckon with, extending their influence as far as Korward as Argao, a testament to their once formidable prowess. But as time passed, the Sharu were exploited by human colonists, their once proud civilization reduced to a subjugated labor force. Then, in 4 BBY, everything changed. It was Lando Calrissian who unwittingly set the stage for a dramatic reversal when he discovered the Mind Harp. The governor of Rafa IV, in a moment of carelessness, triggered the ancient device. The reverberations of its subatomic pulses stirred the long-dormant Sharu, causing the seismic shift in the balance of power across the Rafa system. The Toka were suddenly restored to their former glory as the legendary people, their pyramids crumbled to dust, replaced by strange new cities that rose from the ashes. At the same time, a powerful interdiction field enveloped the system, cutting off hyperspace travel for weeks, strangling trade, and leaving human settlements in ruin. Those who survived fled, abandoning the system to its uncertain fate. In the aftermath, the Rafa system became a magnet for scientists and researchers, all eager to unravel the mysteries of the Sharu. Lando Calrissian, in many eyes, became a reluctant hero, his role in the event celebrated by some. Yet the Sharu themselves remained elusive. They allowed the researchers to study their world, yet remained indifferent to the efforts of what they viewed as lesser sentience. As a result, the true history and technology of the Sha'aru remained cloaked in mystery. Even Emperor Palpatine, sensing the potential threat of the revived species, took precautions, installing a permanent military garrison in the Rafa system. Yet despite the heavy presence of Imperial forces, no direct action was taken against the Sha'aru. The species, their power restored, remained as elusive and unpredictable as ever. In the years that followed, the New Republic dispatched a research team of 500 scholars from the O'Bron Institute for Archaeology, hoping to uncover the secrets of the Sha'aru. Yet even their efforts would be met with the cold indifference of a species long removed from the galaxy's bustling affairs. The Sha'aru, it seemed, were not so easily understood, and their story, one of ancient power and hidden knowledge, was far from finished.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
And this is Jordan.
We're currently deep in the depths of the Grease sewers, admiring their beautiful architecture.
Yeah, and those hieroglyphs of explicit paintings. Why would you? Even back then. Just terrible. But before we get into that, guys, do you know we got some housekeeping to do, first of all. We want to thank everyone who keeps this bucket of bolts flying. Without you, we couldn't do the show. We wouldn't even want to do the show without you. So we want to thank you all. All our current patrons who've been supporting us through the years, and also some of our new ones. We got two new ones this week. It's Aid and Ryan. So thank you very much, guys, for jumping on the Patreon and getting all the access to those membership benefits. If you want to support the show, if you want to become a patron, you can. You get access to our catalog of bonus episodes for $3 a month. And then also for $5 a month, you not only get access to the bonus episodes, but you get ad-free listening to all the new episodes. So that's an extra benefit for the $5 monthly listeners. You could also buy, we do single episode sales of our bonus episodes on Patreon as well for $3. If you don't want to sign up for recurring payments, absolutely not a problem. You can do that as well. We also take single donations on PayPal, starlordspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send a tip, make sure to put a note in that PayPal tip so we know who it's from. And otherwise, another way you could support the show and you get a little extra value as well is buying our merch on Redbubble. So check out the Star Lores store on Redbubble, redbubble.com. Just search Star Lores or go to the link in the description of the show and you can check some of that out. You can also, another way to support the show, if you don't want to support it monetarily, not a problem. If you guys can rate, review, and share the show, that really helps us reach a wider audience. And we love it when you guys do that. So yeah, rate and review, especially Apple, you filthy Apple users. go on iTunes or whatever, Apple Podcasts. I don't use an Apple device, so an Apple phone, rather. I do use an Apple computer, but I don't use any of the Apple listening, like music or anything like that. But if you do, make sure to go to the Star Lores podcast, Star Lores, a Star Wars Legends podcast, and rate and review that show. If you so please, 4 or 5 star reviews are the best. And share the show as well in groups or with friends, people who you think might enjoy it. Also, follow us on social media, guys. Come on, we want to get in touch with you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, X.com. Just search Star Lores and you will find us there. Or Star Lores podcast and we'll pop up. Follow us. We want to hear from you. We want to see you. We're also in Discord. The link is in the description of this show. Follow us on there, jump into Discord, join the conversation. We love hearing from the community. And if you have any
other business inquiries or comments or anything like that, you can email us at starlordspodcast@gmail.com. On top of that, also DM us your Star Wars collections, your fan fiction, your headcanon, your comments, corrections even, and your in-universe ads. We love those in-universe ads from the fans. They're awesome. If you want to send us an in-universe ad, make sure to, you can do it either by a script you can send us and we can read it off, or you can send in an audio recording. If you are sending in an audio recording, please try to be at least using a USB microphone so the quality is up to par with the rest of the episode. And if you can either add music yourself, or we can add it post-production for you as well if you have an idea of what kind of music you
please
want.
Please don't use copyrighted music.
That would be preferable if you don't use copyrighted music. We can, but it's if you have a ad that like specifically needs some sort of then we can maybe make an exception, but it's better if you don't use copyrighted music.
It makes our lives a lot easier.
Yeah. Especially on YouTube. And on that note, actually, also follow us on YouTube. So we are on YouTube. So just go ahead and subscribe. We want to do some more stuff on YouTube. Hopefully that'll be coming soon. But we just have our regular released episodes all on YouTube. So subscribe to us on there. Comment on the episodes, like the episodes. That helps the algorithm and get us in front of more eyeballs. So, yeah. Other than that, Christian, Ancient Aliens.
Yes. Everyone knows the meme. They love
aliens.
The meme. Yes. Well, in Star Wars, they are real, and
yeah.
There are many ancient alien groups. A lot of these species might be familiar to you either through other expanded universes or through our very own episodes. We've touched on a number of these species before, but we haven't really taken the time to go really in depth into like their cultures and civilizations. We talk a lot about them when we're discussing things like ancient technology or like space travel, hyperspace history, those kinds of things. And just recently talking about the Celestials, which are kind of like the ancient alien race. And then you have all these other groups that kind of follow in their wake. But they're all ancient by any metric. So that's just something I wanted to get out of the way. The other thing is that while we only named a few of these ancient alien species, kind of more the galaxy-spanning ones, it's also important to note that there are a lot of other species operating at the same time. Species that we've done dedicated episodes to, like the Hutts, where we discuss their whole civilizations. They're out and kicking about at the same time as a lot of these ones. And then there's other ones like early humans, Duros, and Deveronians, who are, you know, flying around or developing space technology, but maybe don't have the galactic spanning civilizations that some of these other ancient groups do.
Yeah, like they would be like a lot more primitive when these ancient civilizations are at their zenith.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just to paint a more full picture of what's going on in the galaxy in this pre-Republic era, you have all these grand civilizations, you know, like you said, at their peaks.
Yeah.
But then also you do have a bunch of other more primitive species kind of just getting their feet off the ground kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, there's even like, if you think about a species like the Sha'ru, I mean, there was more history in the Sha'ru than there is even than we have of the Galactic Republic, right?
Yeah.
Like there's more time that was spanned in their civilization that like the Galactic Republic, I mean, it's probably like a medium length civilization in terms of the civilizations that we are aware of, you know, so they're not even anything special.
Yeah. But. And that's one of the interesting things about, and this happens to us too in real life and real history, is kind of this time dilation when we think about the past.
Yeah.
Sometimes it escapes us like how short, but also how long time can be. So, you know, when you discuss things on scales of like 100, 200 years, you know, things being considered old in the Americas versus, you know, Europe or Africa or Asia, right? Old is not 300 years. Old is thousands of years, right? So that kind of happens even when we discuss our own cultures and societies as well. We kind of forget how short that is.
Yeah.
And then also even within that 100 years, like you and I haven't been around for 100 years. How much technology has changed in that time, and, you know, civilization has shifted. So it works both ways. It kind of like, it's time is one of those weird things when you try to conceptualize, you kind of forget certain aspects about it.
Yeah. I think there's also like a time probably moved a little slower in most people's like perspective in the ancient world. I don't know if this would be true in Star Wars, but like when I think about it in ours, like we have access to information so readily available to like civilization societies on the other side of the planet, where 4,000 years ago they had absolute, like the ancient Egyptians had no idea what was going on with the Inca, right?
Yeah.
Like they were just like completely unaware. And and so there's just like, you only know what's happening inside your little world.
Your bubble.
Yes. Yeah. And but with our world, it does feel like, it feels like more is happening only because we're so much more aware of more happening.
And more closer to when the things happen, right? Like,
yeah.
You may have heard a city get sacked, you know, on the other side of your country.
Yeah.
But you hear about it like months after it happened.
That's right.
Right? Versus today, you know, in real time when wars are breaking out or, you know, things are changing, decisions are being made. And that changes, right? How quickly you respond and react and how that affects you. You know, you're farming 6 months out of the year. Nothing changes for you.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, very stable, or it feels very stable. Even if things are happening, you don't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear about it weeks after, days after, months after, you know, through the grapevine of other, like, you know, traders or something.
Yeah. People passing through.
Yeah. It's like you don't actually have like an up to date system of knowing what's going on in the world, or much less even your own country.
Yeah, so, exactly. Your ruler makes an edict and it takes months before it actually comes into force.
That's right. Yeah.
You don't even know what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's now I don't know. In like, obviously we have like something like the HoloNet. Obviously, like, we are in a galaxy spanning civilizations here, but you know, things can still travel pretty slow in
especially when you're talking extragalactic or
intergalactic
but interplanetary.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like depending on what kind of spacefaring navigation you use, it takes time to fly through space, through hyperspace. Now a couple of these species specifically have things like warp gates that make it easier. And two different kinds of warp gates. You have the Gri version of it, and you also have the Kwa version of it.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, the Rakata adopt that technology or steal it. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it's a little faster. But still, even with that, you know, information does have kind of bottlenecks here and there.
Yeah, but it's I don't know. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, like, informational bottlenecks. It's like you have only the way that information is transmuting across space is through, like, a little portal that you're like walking.
You can fit like 10 people through at a time.
Yeah. So like even, it still could hypothetically take longer just because of that, but you can't instantaneously from any point in space transmit that information to another point in space. And also, I don't know if this is, you know, my recollection here is fuzzy. I can't quite remember in the Star Wars universe, but I know like in Star Trek, it often will take like a message from like Starfleet Command to get to the Enterprise can take weeks to travel through space, like in their whatever radio transmission they have. So there is like this lag, and you don't actually...
It's not really in real time.
Yeah. They kind of try and make it kind of like... I think they're trying to get... It's similar to how back in the day when they would send out like expeditions on the seas, you know, to send a message, it would take weeks to get it to whatever your expeditionary force was out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know in Star Wars how communication
is a lot more streamlined in Star Wars, as is travel. Like it's hard. Sometimes you kind of forget in the movies just because they're trying to get the plot within a certain time frame. They're not going to spend, you know, hours of runtime sitting on a ship.
Yeah.
But even space travel does take time, even in Star Wars.
Yeah, like hyperspace still isn't an instantaneous thing.
However, I believe information does move a lot faster. Yeah. I think you have
almost
pretty close instantaneous. Yeah. There's a lot of scenes where, you know, people are talking to each other through holo communication.
Right. Yeah.
Like instantly. I'm in a room talking to you almost like a telephone call, right?
Yeah.
Now, granted, even lags in those things do exist. There are microseconds of lag in phone calls and right. internet connections even. So even then, it's not a perfect real-time representation, but it's so minimal as to be irrelevant. Like, you're not talking days or weeks to transfer information.
Yeah.
Let alone months or years.
Yeah, yeah.
In other cases, if your technology's not up there with these civilizations. But
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, and again, like we kind of mentioned before, that trope of like ancient species having like reached pinnacles of technology that are unfathomable, right? Like, these ancient civilizations had technology that surpasses what's considered, quote, modern technology in Star Wars, right? Like,
yeah, well, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up too. Like, hypothetically, these, like, if the ancient Gree were at their pinnacle, were to face the Republic at its pinnacle.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, absolutely. Who would one-sided. Win? Yeah, the Gree, absolutely.
Yeah, Gree would, like, just wipe them out. Which is sort of weird to think that, like, civilization has actually regressed in some ways, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is a common trope, too, of this, like, these ancient civilizations being bigger and better and having more technology than the past. Even in real life, we have kind of like a historical kind of trope that pervades even things like archaeology or pseudo-archaeology, where people, we've had instances of big losses of knowledge, right? Like, yeah, the burning of the Library of Alexandria, for example, mm-hmm, where people like to imagine like, oh, what secrets did they know? And, you know, what technology did they have that surpasses ours today? Which, you know, I'd be highly skeptical of, you know, having modern technology, but I certainly would agree that there's a lot that we don't know that the ancients were able to achieve on their own.
Right.
And I think that's a testament to those groups and just human ingenuity generally.
That's happened quite a few times in history, where that used to be just the norm, where you sacked a city and
burned everything.
Yeah, burned everything, yeah, all their knowledge, and you know, just you were kind of trying to destroy their culture, so you try not to leave anything behind that would tie them to their culture.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, right? Like, it's hard to say a lot of the ancient stuff that we do find, it's not really like scientific knowledge per se. Like, a lot of people want to assume it's just myths, right?
Yeah.
And stuff like, and like words of wisdom and stuff like,
yeah,
that. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
But even things about like the people's history or how they live their daily lives, that stuff gets lost too. So even the mundane,
yeah,
is also what disappears. Just really quick, a final point on that is the rise and fall of civilizations generally. I think it's a very arrogant position to think that your civilization will last forever. Yeah. And in Star Wars, each one of these civilizations, like we said, reached peaks higher than what we know as the Republic and the Empire.
Yeah.
And they too eventually faded away into obscurity. And, you know, you have civilizations at their peaks in the past, like the Egyptians, the Romans, the Chinese, various Chinese empires.
Yeah.
All end up in ruins. Mm-hmm. So just a warning to the future is don't get too high on that horse, because every civilization ends at some point. That's just been the law of history so far. So
yeah, absolutely. Like, you can't rest on your laurels, and especially in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good lesson to
take away,
go home with. Yeah. But on that note, anything else?
No, just a little meandering through the past, and then we'll come back to the present with our future episodes.
Absolutely. All right, see you guys later.